Welcome to Compliance Perspectives. I'm Courtney Nordrum from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. I'm here today with Jonathan Armstrong. Jonathan is a partner with Cordery. Welcome to the podcast, Jonathan.
Thanks very much, Courtney.
We're excited to have Jonathan here because not only is he an excellent compliance professional, he's British and we love British accents. So, Jonathan, before we get into talking about your topic of Brexit, can we hear a little bit about your history? How'd you get into compliance?
I think for me, compliance is, I suppose, always something that I've been interested in. So my practice has always been around technology and compliance. I guess I was a computer geek as a kid, and then I would say slightly grew out of it, and then was dragged back into the compliance aspects of technology by a number of clients, I guess, towards the end of the 90s. And then I've done, you know, this type of work ever since. And then in the early 2000s, I did a time with a US corporation as a sort of quasi in-house lawyer for them, putting together some global compliance projects, and thought that was really exciting. That's what I wanted to do. So I think as a result, the majority of my clients have been US-based multinationals ever since. And then 3 years ago, we set up Cordery just to focus on compliance. We thought that a number of the law firms we saw, compliance was almost something they did when they weren't busy on other things. Mm-hmm. And we thought that a firm that had compliance front and center was something we wanted to be a part of, and that's been our 3-year adventure, really.
We really appreciate you being here on site at our 5th annual European Compliance and Ethics Institute. We're sitting in a lovely room in Prague, and this morning Jonathan and 3 panelists spoke to our audience about Brexit and what Brexit is going to mean for compliance. While this is an enormous topic with quite a few implications, we managed to distill it down a little bit this morning. Can you summarize some of the key points that we hit on this morning?
Yeah, I think for me, one of the things that I think I'm glad came across this morning is that there's a lot of talk about how uncertain it is, just as I guess there's talk in the US about how uncertain the Trump administration is. But as businesses, we've got to deal with uncertainty. That's part of what life is for us. So what we tried to do is concentrate on those things that were certain or at least predictable. So we know that, for example, in the area of data privacy, that the new EU data protection rules, what's called the GDPR, will come in the UK. That much is certain. We know that there will be some type of deal for data transfer between the UK and the US. We can probably have an educated guess now as to what that's going to look like. We know that the UK will still be concerned about bribery and the Bribery Act, because that isn't something that's a European led development. That's something that's a UK led development. We know that modern slavery remains unaltered, and the UK's commitment to stamping out slavery in the supply chain is unhindered by Brexit. And then we looked at some of those remaining uncertainties, things like customs, things like the REACH regulation around chemicals. And we had quite an insightful presentation from Keith Benjamin of Jaguar Land Rover in how a multinational business deals with uncertainty. So Keith has a team of 300 compliance and legal professionals that are monitoring change on a global basis. Obviously, automobiles are a very complex product to sell.
So highly regulated.
Yeah, and they deal with a lot of complexities anyway. You know, some of their products are essentially supercomputers on wheels. So we looked at how you cope with change, and I think one of Keith's watchwords, which is a takeaway for me, I think, is that you look back almost at the fundamentals of a business. If you're a business that tells your employees to do the right thing, well, that doesn't change. And it doesn't change whether the law is led from Brussels or London, because your focus with your clients is you have to behave properly regardless of the law, or regardless of there being no law saying that. You still have that core value that runs like the lettering through the stick of rock if you're English, or whatever the I guess it would be the filling through the calzone of compliance, if you like. And so stuff like that I thought was interesting. And then we had some really interesting guidance, I think, from Matthew Hurlhouse, a British journalist, who's really got into the weeds of how things are looking politically. His view being that there will be some negotiation, clearly, but the early signs are that the negotiation will be a little more civilized than some predict. And there's a realization, I think, you know, as we sit here in Prague, of course, this is a place that's gone through major change with the separation in living memory from the communist regime to the separation of Czechoslovakia into what's now Czechia and Slovakia, and then its accession into the European Union. So whatever the change is, it's not going to be as dramatic as Czechia. And at the same time, I think the Czechs are acutely aware of the fact that their fifth biggest trading partner is the UK. So this is something that people have to agree. You know, 6% of exports depend on the UK as well. So it's a problem for the UK, yes, but it's a wider problem for the European Union, particularly when set against the change that we have in the US as well. And then our final speaker was my colleague Andre Bywater, who's done a lot of work on the fundamentals of what these changes might be in areas like REACH, modern slavery, privacy particularly, and looking at whether there is stuff that we can learn from EU accession countries. So those that joined the EU, and that was technically called the ACQUI, the set of rules that they had to agree to. Mm-hmm. And are there any parallels between the ACQUI when you join and when you leave? And so all of those things together, I think, do give us some certainty. Is it a definite world? No. But what is definite in this world? You know, we've had a year of horrendous political turmoil. Whatever your politics are, you acknowledge that there's been change.
Yes.
And this, is it a complexity that we could do without? Absolutely. But is it something where we just literally throw our head around and hit ourselves, you know, with a baseball or cricket bat, depending on which side of the Atlantic we're on? Well, probably not. I think we can live and we can survive. And the other important thing that I think everybody on the panel said is you do need a proper plan. Just because the politicians might be in a tailspin doesn't mean to say that business should be as well.
So keep calm and carry on.
Keep calm and carry on. Exactly that.
So we learned this morning, well, we learned last week that the Article 50 had been filed, which gives the 2-year deadline.
Yes.
So we have at least now a timing aspect to what Brexit is going to look like.
Yeah.
But we also got some good news for the UK, which is basically the EU said, we're not going to punish you further than Brexit. Brexit is punishment enough.
Yeah.
So is that something that is uplifting and good news for business?
Yeah, I think it is to an extent. I think we're certainly, it wasn't as bad as it could have been in mm-hmm. terms of the opening salvo. And I'm very pleased that there was some sensible reaction. The 2-year period, I think, won't be definite. There mm-hmm. will still be things that remain to be done at the end. And the whole history, I guess, of Europe is that deadlines tend to be somewhat malleable. I think we know that it's likely to be a minimum of 2 years, but my suspicion is that things like elements of the trade deal may be postponed, if you like. How I see it happening is that we might have transitional arrangements in different areas. Just as in a major corporation, for example, if you sell off part of the business, then there's normally something called a TSA, Transitional Services Agreement, where the mothership still provides services. And I can see that as a model that might work in the EU. So we might have almost like a TSA covering elements like the European Court of Justice, which Matthew thought might well happen. And we might have TSAs covering, for example, things like GDPR and what are technically called adequacy decisions on data transfer. So we might have these transitional arrangements. And if you like, the UK's approach to domestic law is broadly similar. They have this umbrella bill, if you like, that sort of whilst it's called a repeal bill, effectively almost says nothing gets repealed until we've decided to. And that is almost similar to a TSA as well. You know, we'll take that legislation that we already have and we'll park it there and it'll stay there until we've got the time or the inclination to change. So I think from a business perspective, there is some certainty there, not as much as we'd like, granted. But then the thing that I think is a little concerning, as Matthew said, is that there are a number of industries who say we should be at the top of the queue for this to be sorted out because we are special.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of industries saying that at the moment, you know, the
all
drinks industry. Yeah, yeah, and that's probably right. Exception reporting would be the easiest thing. Name an industry that hasn't said that.
Mm-hmm.
But logically, that cannot happen. They can't obviously always be at the top of the list. So some industries are going to be disappointed. And I think that means that it behoves any business to plan for it not being in the special cases.
Mm-hmm.
So if I am a chemicals business, then I'll have to understand how the REACH process for importation of chemicals is likely to be unraveled. And I'll have to work out what the UK position is likely to be on that. If I'm involved in financial services and things like money laundering laws are going to be different, then I'll have to have a plan for that. Things like know your client rules, I'll have to have a plan for that. And why? Because of course, deals we're doing now are likely to be surviving into the post-Brexit world. So if I'm a bank and I'm onboarding a client now, I don't want to dis-onboard them on Brexit and then re-onboard
everything.
Them. I want to try and plan for that happening now. And even in the compliance world, that means that issues like privilege, for example, become an even more involved topic than it is already, because privilege for EU-led investigations has been a political hot potato for the last 10 years or more, with the non-recognition of in-house attorney privilege that a lot of compliance teams still rely on for some of their work. And there's an added complexity there as well, I think, in terms of how will a post-Brexit EU look at issues like privilege when the voice at the table that was giving the Anglo-Saxon view, so the American English common law view of things, won't be at that table anymore. So I think the threat to US corporations is perhaps more acute than you might think, because there's nobody to explain the US way of things to the EU institutions except for Ireland, and Ireland obviously is a smaller country in terms of its lobbying power and just by sheer weight of numbers
I don't think the Irish would argue that they carry less political weight
than no
as a British compliance practitioner based in the UK, what are you telling your clients to do over the next year and a half?
I think planning is the key thing. I mean, most of our work is across borders. So typically we're acting for US corporations by doing compliance programs for them, you know, across Europe. So I think a lot of the mechanics of what we're doing hasn't changed. You know, we've always said to them that Germany is different from France, is different from the Netherlands in terms of, I don't know, let's say a helpline implementation. So we've always had that approach of think global, act local. And I think that doesn't change. You know, you're still going to have to take into account German sensibilities versus French versus the Netherlands and the UK. You know, they're separate companies, that they will be post-Brexit. But I think that it's in those almost those smaller areas that matter a lot to you as a business, but less to the world at large, that you'll probably need to focus your energy. So if you produce, I don't know, curly-whirly radiators for domestic homes, and you know that there is a Spanish anti-curly-whirly lobby that's going to have an unopposed voice in the EU domestic heating committee, I'm making all this up obviously, then you need to look for your friends in Latvia or Estonia who also have this real love of curly whirly radiators. You know, you need to be doing your planning now and working out that if the UK doesn't have a voice at the table, then who does, who has an identity of interest with us. And you also need to be planning for the separation of some of these EU institutions. That's a difficult task because, of course, a lot of things like environment, part of those powers have been ceded to Brussels. Mm-hmm. So there isn't an equivalent in the UK because that went a while ago. And the UK will be recruiting to mirror those organisations, but that won't be ready yet. And then I guess you've also got to look out for some developments that might be slightly niche to you. So if you're in healthcare, one of the big issues will be potentially the European Medicines Agency, currently situated in London. Can an EU institution be based in a country that isn't in the EU? So that sort of stuff we don't know. If I'm applying for approvals for medicines, and I'm predicting that there's going to be a change in that agency, do I want to do things like accelerate my clinical trials to get things done in a period of relative certainty versus an agency in a state of change when I'm making my applications? So I think for most organizations, there is a fundamental core of stuff that affects every organization. And of course, they've got to look at that. But you've also got to look at the special stuff that you do in your relationship with the EU and look at how likely that is to change as well. And obviously, that's where a lot of your energy is going to be focused. Because this is special stuff to you, not a lot of people are writing about it, not a lot of people are thinking about it. And it might be something that you have to put on the agenda of both UK and EU institutions to make sure that your interests are taken into account when decisions are made.
Do you have any resources for information not only on Brexit, but on how compliance might be impacted by Brexit over the next 5, 10, 20 years?
Where would I start? I mean, obviously...
Google.
Well, I'd start at the Cordra YouTube channel, of course. We have a short film that looks at some of these issues. We obviously wrote a blog for SCCE on, I think, the day of Brexit. And I think most of the stuff that we thought then, you know, it's 7 o'clock in the morning after the vote, I think probably still holds true. Matthew's writing now for MLEX, who are a great resource, I think, and they have some subscription services, some free to air on Brexit, where they're tracking the political negotiations. I think that's incredibly useful. I think they're probably where I'd start. Some of the trade bodies have some good materials out already, some less good. I, as I say, I'm not a fan of those panels and those publications and those podcasts, and there are many that are saying, oh, this is all uncertain, wait and see, because as I've said, business has to deal with uncertainty. We can't behave like the ostrich, if it did, of thinking, you know, wake me up in two and a half years and tell me what's happened, because I might have lost my ability to plan. I might have lost my
and you're going to be behind my voice. The ball.
You are. So I think it's a matter of, yeah, reaching out. And I know most businesses think they're special. And I think many of them are in cases like this, because they will be thinking up issues. You know, I'm not ashamed to say that we've obviously been following, you know, the whole how this will pan out from day one and the article that I wrote. And there were things this morning that from the panel that I just not thought about as well. And so there are no stupid questions here. We are in uncharted territory, and feel free to, you know, pick up the phone to somebody you know and trust on these topics, and just have a talk with them about it. And you might, you know, you might be asking a question that nobody's thought about before, but you might not. You know, many of the questions that we're seeing have been asked before, you know, the default trade position, for example, and that sort of thing, I think, is relatively easy to answer and to outline.
Jonathan, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule, both speaking and exhibiting here at the European Compliance and Ethics Institute to talk about Brexit with me.
My pleasure. No, good to speak to you.